Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters. Today, we hear from the three candidates for Judge of the Kenosha Circuit Court Branch 6. They are vying for the seat being vacated by the retiring judge, Mary Wagner. They square off in the primary election on Tuesday, February 16th. Afterwards, the two winners will face off in the April 6th spring election to take the seat. This forum was recorded on January 30th. The local circuit courts are, quote, unified trial courts with original jurisdiction in all civil and criminal matters within the state, close quote. They are the general trial courts. Circuit court judges are elected to six-year terms in the nonpartisan spring elections. Kenosha County has more than one such court. Our guests are seeking the Branch 6 courtroom bench. I've given this brief explanation to allow the candidates to focus their answers on their qualifications, to highlight differences among them, and to discuss other relevant topics so that voters can decide. My ballot is waiting on the kitchen island. Let's go. Welcome to our three candidates, Elizabeth Pfeiffer, Angelina Gabrielle, and Angela Cunningham. Good morning.
Good morning.
We'll follow our usual format with two-minute opening and one-minute closing statements by the candidates. I'll ask questions in between, and they'll alternate in responding. If I slip up on the order, I'm counting on you all to object. In return, as a layperson, I'm willing to stipulate that all three seem qualified, yet there are differences in their professional training and activities with respect to the law, differences in experiences in their practice of law, and differences in their life stories. So first, your opening statements, please, describing your qualifications, professional development, and relevant life experiences. I'll ask why you're running later. You'll have up to 2 minutes. We had a drawing together for speaking order just before recording this program. Our leadoff candidate is Angela Cunningham. Angela, you're on.
Thank you, Len. My name is Angela Cunningham. I am a defense attorney and guardian ad litem with my own practice, ADC Law Office here in Kenosha. I grew up in Western Kenosha County. I am a proud graduate of Wilmot Union High School. After high school, I went away to college and became pregnant with my son after my first year of college. I came back home to try to figure out what I wanted to do going forward and ended up transferring to University of Wisconsin-Madison, where I completed my undergraduate degree in social welfare and women's studies and my master's degree in social work. I came back to the Kenosha area and worked in social services for several years. Before going to law school, I was at the ELCA Outreach Center located in the basement of Grace Lutheran Church. At the time, it's now in Uptown. While I was there, I worked with a lot of individuals who were low income and had financial issues and also had legal issues, and there weren't very many resources available for them to get help. So it was at that time that I decided to go to law school so that I could come back to Kenosha to help people who couldn't afford to hire a lawyer. I went to Northwestern University and completed my JD in their two-year accelerated JD program. Came back to Kenosha and worked at Legal Action of Wisconsin representing victims of domestic violence. And I also worked as a prosecutor at the Milwaukee District Attorney's Office. And as I mentioned now, I am with my own law firm. Throughout that time, I've remained active in the community. I currently serve on the board of directors for Catholic Charities, previously served on the board for the Hope Council and Kenosha Community Health Center. I also participate in a number of community organizations and coalitions. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, our next candidate in order of the drawing is Elizabeth Pfeiffer. Elizabeth.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Elizabeth Pfeiffer. I'm a current member.
We're having a little trouble hearing you. Can you want to speak up?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. My name is Elizabeth Pfeiffer. Is that okay?
Yes. Okay. Go ahead. I'm going to restart the clock for you, okay?
That'll be on our blooper reel, ladies. I can't wait. Okay.
Go.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Elizabeth Pfeiffer. I'm a current member of the judicial branch in Kenosha County as a court commissioner. I grew up in Kenosha, graduating from Tremper before I went to UW-Madison, where I had two majors and a minor with the intention, of course, of going to law school. I graduated from a top 10 law school and moved out west to become a deputy district attorney. I also did private practice before coming back to Wisconsin, where I worked as a law professor for a number of years. I was also chair of a legal studies department at that college. I then returned to the practice of law in Kenosha, worked for a small law firm before I opened my own, became a guardian ad litem, and eventually was appointed as a court commissioner, as I indicated. I have extensive training. Every year we do judicial training. Every year I do judicial trainings as well as education. Ever since graduation, the learning never stops when you are an attorney. I grew up in Kenosha. My husband grew up in Bristol, and we've settled in Summers to raise our families. I have experience in every type of law that the circuit court judges handle, from family to child abuse and neglect, criminal, guardianships, juvenile, and probate. Thank you.
Anything else? You go. Still have half a minute left.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I just got so distracted by the note. So I think we're good.
All right. And number three on our list in the drawing, Angelina Gabrielle. Angelina.
Good morning. I'm Angelina Gabrielle. I'm the deputy district attorney at the Kenosha District Attorney's Office, and I've been a prosecutor for 25 years working to protect Kenosha and give a voice to victims. My father, a single dad who was an immigrant from Italy, worked as a union butcher. He moved us to Kenosha in 1986, where I attended Bradford High School. I graduated from UW-Madison and then UW Law School in 1995. I immediately joined the Kenosha County District Attorney's Office. I did this because I wanted to protect children from abuse and neglect and believed that victims needed advocates who would pursue justice while also ensuring fairness that protects the rights of defendants. I was honored to be able to assist many people who were victimized in some of the most challenging cases to prove, women and children who were sexually assaulted, abused, and even those who had been murdered. I'm proud of my 25 years dealing with Kenosha's most serious cases, the past 4 years as the deputy district attorney, where I supervise 16 assistant DAs. I'm involved in policymaking, law enforcement training, and I've worked with the DA to bring additional treatment opportunities and chances to avoid prosecution for those suffering from addiction and trauma. For me, it's always been about protecting Kenosha and victims, and so I've been involved in multidisciplinary teams with key stakeholders looking for solutions to child deaths, human trafficking, and child abuse. I've been fortunate enough to teach prosecutors throughout the state on key issues of law and trial advocacy, and I was honored to work at the Attorney General's office assisting victims across the state. I bring this commitment to my personal life as well. I'm the proud mother of two sons and a foster son who's now in the military. Through him, I was able to see firsthand some of the implicit bias and fairness that exists in our society and the trauma that comes from... Oh, sorry.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask now the first follow-up question, and we're going to start rotating in the answers. And so I'm going to ask Elizabeth Pfeiffer to go next, and I'm going to give you 2 minutes instead of 90 seconds because of a technical issue that caused you to be distracted in your opening statement, Elizabeth, so I want to be completely fair. And my follow-up question is, why? Why are you running for this seat? Why do you want to be a judge? Why not just keep doing what you're doing? And perhaps, why are you running now this year? Elizabeth Pfeiffer.
Thank you. That's the question I think we get asked the most, and it's very important that people understand our motivations. Why really has to do with when as well. After last year with the pandemic and we shut down the courthouse where I work as a commissioner, we had to figure out alternative ways to handle our court cases so we wouldn't have such a huge backlog. I think for the first time in a very, very, very long time, if not history, the courthouse was closed for a substantial period of time. No cases could be heard, no disputes resolved. They were really doing the bare minimum there. And so as a court commissioner, I attended numerous meetings with the judges and other court commissioners, other stakeholders, and we came up with some solutions, including Zoom court, broadcasting on YouTube, different ways for people to file paperwork and things like that. And to be firsthand in that and be active with them really inspired me that now's the time for me to want to do more. As a court commissioner, I've been able to provide access to justice to many of the litigants who come before me who don't have the means, resources, or knowledge to handle their court cases. And as a circuit court judge, I would have that opportunity to do that much more. And so when I thought about long and hard when Judge Wagner was stepping down, the type of judge I wanted to see take over for her, someone with qualifications, education, experience, and who would be able to basically hit the ground running as a circuit court judge, I thought that would be me with that. That sounds weird, but really when I look at my qualifications, background, and how closely I've worked with the judges, I think the timing is good. And really last year motivated me that as happy as I am as a court commissioner, there's more I want to do. And this will absolutely afford me that opportunity to continue to give back to Kenosha. I've done a lot of pro bono work. I won a Wisconsin Pro Bono Honor Society Award for 2 years. And as a court commissioner, I'm limited in the pro bono work I can do. But as a circuit court judge, there's so many ideas that I have about expanding lawyers' roles in our courts.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to reset my clock now for 90 seconds for the rest of our Q&A period. So we'll just scroll that down. We're on a solo exhibition here with COVID. And our next person in turn answer that question, why you, why now, why are you running, is Angelina. Angelina?
When there was an opening in the circuit courts, many people approached me, including some judges, and strongly encouraged me to run. They thought I was qualified, that my strong commitment and work ethic and experience was what the Kenosha courts needed, someone with an open mind to solutions that would best protect our community long term. When I heard Judge Wagner was retiring, I thought she was such an amazing judge. I felt strongly that it was her shoes that I wanted to fill, to be that kind of judge that she is, with the can-do, get-it-done attitude, looking for improvement, looking to help, to be fair, and who also gives victims a voice. So I thought I could bring all that I have accomplished over my 25 years of experience, my one-on-one experience with victims of crime, the understanding of their trauma, my understanding of the impact of crime and incarceration on families. My foster son's parents had been in and out of jail and had drug issues, and continue to do my best to improve our community as judge. Because for me, it's always been about doing the right thing for my community, both in my professional life and my personal life.
Thank you. And thank you. That was Angelina Gabrielle. And now we're going to go to Angela Cunningham for her response. Angela?
When I was at the Milwaukee District Attorney's Office, pretty early on in my career, I was assigned to the preliminary hearing court one morning. And I walked into the courtroom, and I'm going to set up a visual. So in the gallery area are defendants, people charged with crimes, and their family members and supporters. Most of the people in that gallery area were Black or Latino. Then there is a plexiglass wall that you need to be led into or buzzed into. And then on the other side of the wall is law enforcement, attorneys, court commissioners heard the preliminary hearing cases, and the court clerk. That side of the wall was all white individuals. And then me, once I got there. And I think it was at that moment I knew that I wanted to one day be a judge. I had a chance to speak with several judges that I absolutely admire who are on the bench in Milwaukee and also in Kenosha. And everyone thought that because of my personal experience in the community and involvement in the community, that I would bring a lot to the bench, not just in my personal diversity as an African-American woman, but my diversity and experience as well as involvement in the community and knowledge of what's going on in the community.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And now we're going to move on to questions that the candidates have no idea I was going to ask. And I didn't even know myself what order I would ask them until this morning. So, number one, would you please discuss the advantages and the disadvantages of your background? Explain to us how your experiences on one or both sides of the bench, and what are, in your experience, what makes you the best candidate based on your experience, and what were the good and bad advantages of the experience that you do bring to the question. And we're going to now rotate to Angelina Gabriel to begin.
Well, during the course of my career, I think 25 years as a prosecutor, I've had to examine cases from all sides, from the side of a prosecutor, from the side of a defense attorney, from the side of a judge looking for legal issues. I've had one-on-one experience with victims so that they can help me understand what it means to be the victim of a crime, to understand the trauma and the sadness and the isolation and sometimes ostracization that goes on when you're the victim of a serious crime. I think that's the kind of experience that is really important for a judge. I think over the course of the years, I've had to examine a lot of serious cases for legal issues. I've had to do research. Not every issue that comes up is one that I've addressed before. And so I have that analytical skill and the sound judgment that comes from dealing with serious cases. And I think that's really important for a judge. So while I may have not handled every type of case, like some of my some of the other amazing women here today, I do think I have the skill and the judgment that comes from the experience that I've had.
Thank you. And now let's turn to our next respondent, and that would be Angela Cunningham.
I think it would be me when. Am I come after Angela? No?
It's going back to the top. It would be me.
Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
All right.
Section overruled.
let me restart the clock. Go.
Sorry, Angela.
So I have the advantage of practicing in various areas of the law. I've been a prosecutor where I have made charging decisions and looked at all aspects and considered the safety of the community and worked one-on-one with victims of domestic violence and understanding their fears and motivations. I've also worked with criminal defendants, people who have been charged with the crimes, and understanding, again, a person's fears, motivations, and how they find themselves involved in the criminal justice system. And I bring all of that experience to the bench to be able to analyze both sides and having an understanding of what's going on in the both sides. Then even further than that, judges don't just hear criminal cases. Judges hear civil cases, they hear family cases, they hear juvenile cases. As a guardian ad litem, I have experience in family cases, I have experience in juvenile cases and guardianship cases. Also as a private practitioner, I have handled civil cases such as small claims and cases like that as well. Further, my community involvement. So judges make decisions that don't just affect the people in front of them, but they also make decisions that affect the community at large. And so my knowledge of the community and understanding how the community is affected by the court system definitely is a huge advantage that I will bring to the bench.
Thank you. And finally, in response to that question, Elizabeth Pfeiffer.
Thank you. With regards to advantages, I have sat all over the courtroom, first as an intern just observing, then as the prosecuting attorney at the prosecutor's desk, then as a defense attorney across the aisle, and now I sit at the bench. So both in criminal cases, when I'm over doing preliminary hearings, setting bond, deciding probable cause, as well as over in my courtroom where I handle family, paternity, contempt, as also when I'm filling in on the small claims and traffic issues. And so I really have been all over the courtroom. And I think that has been so beneficial as the decision maker. I issue court orders, decide cases for people, and I also maintain decorum in a courtroom, something that the attorneys, as well as the participants, don't necessarily have to be concerned with, but safety and decorum are a priority. And so that's a huge advantage, I believe, in that I've already been at the decision-making table, been doing this for 5 years and reappointed by the judges every time. I've been an attorney for over 23 years with experience in all of the different types of law that circuit court judges will handle. And that is because running for judge has always been something that I wanted to do. And I think the logical step was to become a commissioner so that I would gain the experience and actually make sure this was right for me. And so that was an advantage I also have, is knowing that I do have the courtroom temperament. I can maintain my dockets. And while I do make serious decisions, there's a lot of daily things that are smaller that I also handle.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me reset our clock here. All right. Now, the next question is a little different. And we'll start with Ms. Cunningham. What is justice? And does it differ from social justice? Ms. Cunningham.
Justice is ensuring that everyone has a fair shot when they are in the courtroom. It's ensuring that everybody's voice is heard. It's ensuring that someone does not have an advantage because of their socioeconomic status, or because of their race, or because of their ableism, or because of their gender. Justice is, if you think about the scales of justice in Lady Justice, she is wearing a blindfold. Justice is blind, and it should be applied equally to everybody who's involved. Social justice is different in that social justice, I think, targets a different audience. Social justice is about ensuring that laws are put in place that are fair across the board, and judges don't make laws. Judges enforce the law. And so judges are to ensure that the law is applied fairly across all parties. And the social justice movement is to make sure that those laws follow the Constitution that was put in place to protect everyone.
Thank you. Next, for that question, Elizabeth Pfeiffer. Elizabeth?
Thank you. I look at justice as both individualized as well as larger scale. Individualized, it's the parties who come before you in court, who have a dispute, who they're not able to resolve it. And so they need to feel that they've not only had an opportunity to be heard, but they had the effective ability to participate, that they had a neutral trier of fact, whether it's a court commissioner, judge, or jury, and that they weren't slighted along the way. They may not agree with the decision at the end, but they understand the process and were able to participate. And one of my big platforms is to ensure we have fair and equal access to people. Equal access isn't enough. Anyone can come to the courthouse and file a lawsuit or be party to it. Not everyone can be fair access to justice if they can't read, if they have socioeconomical things that stop them, mental health issues. And so as a court commissioner and as a circuit court judge, I'll make sure that we have both, so people do have the outcome they're seeking, even if it's not quite what they wanted. Large scale really is the social justice, to make sure that we have a system that's in place that is functioning so that everyone gets those advantages, so that we don't have a system where people feel as though, because of the way I look, sound, where I live, I'm not getting that access that I deserve as well. And so you can do that on the small scale daily, like I do as a court commissioner. Circuit court judges can impact policies on a larger scale as well.
Thank you. And finally, Angelina Gabrielle on the question, please.
So justice, I think, is about giving victims a voice, giving defendants a voice, giving all parties in court a voice that is heard with respect and with fairness, as these other women have described. I think there are many situations where victims come to court and they feel like they haven't had a voice. And that's what's prompted the Marcy's Law movement, where victims do not feel court is a safe place to go. They don't feel that they are protected there. And that is a part of justice. Justice involves protecting our community, protecting our victims, and making sure that those who offend are given an opportunity for prevention, rehabilitation, treatment, if that's what they need. And none of those decisions should be swayed by prejudice, public opinion, or politics. And I think that's where social justice comes into play. Social justice is something the legislature needs to work on. Courts have some role in following the rules imposed by the legislature, the laws imposed by the legislature, but the real change for social justice comes from the legislature. And judges are not to change the law, they're to apply the law. And the rule of law is important, as long as it's done fair and impartially, not without prejudice or public opinion.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And now for our next question, and we'll be starting with Elizabeth Pfeiffer for this one. Some critics say we have a vengeance and revenge system more than a justice system. They point to prisons that are not restorative in terms of education, human development services, job readiness on release, or even health. Ditto, maybe worse, for juvenile detention facilities. Your take on this issue, Ms. Pfeiffer.
Thank you. Focusing on the criminal justice system, something I've been doing since college when I had my certificate in criminal justice, as well as behavioral science as a major, we do have, and we have had, systems in different states and across the United States that are unfair, that are motivated by profit. Sometimes you hear that the prisons or jails are holding people and they like to hold them because they get more money, whether it's because they're holding federal prisoners in a state prison. That motivation should never be a factor in when we're incarcerating people. A lot of times when you hear about crimes that are committed, the public outcry is that person needs to be punished, punish, punish, punish. And they don't want to hear other options about rehabilitation or deterrence or whatnot. And so as a court system, that's part of the role of the circuit court judges, is to be creative with their solutions. There's an amazing judge out of Texas who I saw speak at a training seminar who was creative with his punishments. So bringing back a little bit of shame would help in the system, making people wear, now I'm not saying I would do this, but he would have them wear sandwich boards that said I stole from this shop, or bumper stickers that said I got a DUI, and things that would actually perhaps deter as well. And I think that there is a mentality of, if you're guilty, then you got to do the time. And we have got to start being more creative with our solutions and educating the public that it's important that we deter and rehabilitate.
Thank you very much. Now I'll turn to Ms. Gabrielle. Your response, please.
I do think that in some places in this country that is a serious problem, and in Wisconsin there may be some of those issues as well. But having been in the criminal court system for 25 years, I know what's available in prison, and over the years that has evolved. So that it is not about vengeance and revenge, that this is about protecting our community for those who need to be incarcerated. And it's also about rehabilitation and deterrence. There are many programs available in prison that do address education and treatment and cognitive thinking for change. There's a challenge incarceration program, which is like a boot camp so people can have early release. There are sex offender treatment programs, anger management programs that deal with substance abuse. The Kenosha Correctional Center here in Kenosha has a re-entry program for those who are being released so that they will have assistance in trying to find jobs so that they can enter the community with financial security and a sense of pride that they are contributing. We at the DA's office have been really motivated by finding long-term solutions to crime, and that does include treatment. We've participated in creating the mental health and treatment court that deals with drug addiction and mental health problems. So I think there are wide-ranging solutions, and I'm open to those.
Thank you. Ms. Cunningham, your take on the issue.
I think mass incarceration is a major problem. It's a major problem in the state of Wisconsin. It's a major problem in this country. And unfortunately, there are certain populations that are disproportionately affected by the mass incarceration. And I think incarcerating someone breaks up families. It causes stability problems in families and in the communities, and has long-term, I think, negative effects in our communities. So I support trying to reduce mass incarceration by looking at alternative ways. Our current courts do have drug court and a mental health court. I would love to see that expanded and applied, I think, to a much wider group of our population, and looking at much more creative ways to hold somebody responsible for their actions while also getting to the root cause of what caused them to commit a crime and get involved in the criminal justice system. I support incarceration for violent offenders, but I think the majority of people who find themselves with lengthy sentences, I would like to work with the court system to try to come up with alternatives to keep our community safe while also keeping families stable and keeping our community stable.
Thank you. I'm going to ask a follow-up question in a sense to this. Judges get to speak from the bench, but they don't wear a gag everywhere else. Canon 4 of the Code of Conduct for United States Judges states, quote, "A judge may engage in extrajudicial activities, including law-related pursuits, and civic, charitable, educational, religious, social, financial, fiduciary, and government activities. They may speak, write, lecture, and teach on both law-related and non-legal subjects." Close quote. The canon goes on to describe this freedom for judges in great detail, so much so that it's possible to construe the canon as encouraging judges to speak and advocate appropriately. How would you, as a judge, use this authority to advocate for reforms in laws, in sentencing, and in prison conditions? Ms. Gabrielle.
Well, as a judge, I think I have a voice, obviously, as anyone does. And the experience from my years as a prosecutor to know that we do need more. We need long-term solutions that protect our community by deterring recidivism and deterring crime in general from even ever happening. So I think I would like to continue the work that I do as a prosecutor on these multidisciplinary teams where we look for solutions, where we look for additional programs that can assist people as they're coming out of prison, or programs that can help avoid them going to prison if that's what they need. If they need treatment, drug addiction, mental health, or otherwise, if they need assistance with a job placement. I think our Department of Corrections through probation and parole makes a really good effort at that. But of course, as judge, I would support other solutions and explore and research what could be done and make those suggestions. A judge has a powerful voice in this community, and I certainly would not be afraid to use it for those purposes because it achieves the ultimate goal of a judge, which is to protect our community, hold people accountable, and, be fair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Cunningham, your take on that question.
As judge, we are using our discretion to give a sentence that we think has the best outcome for all parties involved, including the victim, the offender, their respective families, and the community at large. So absolutely, I think we want to have a stake and a voice in the options that are available for us to give for a sentence. So as a judge, I want to be sure that if I'm giving a sentence for someone to go to prison, that they are going to be in an environment where they where the conditions are not deplorable and not problematic. I also want to make sure that they're in an environment where they're getting rehabilitation so that when they are released into the come back to the community, they come back to the community to be a functioning individual and are less likely to reoffend or get involved in the same types of activities that found themselves there in the first place. As a judge, I also would like to be actively involved in coming up with other alternatives to be able to sentence individuals who appear before me. That means working with leaders and community organizations to identify the root causes of why people find themselves in the criminal justice system and identifying solutions to try to address them at the community level. So as a judge, I have those opportunities available to me.
Thank you. And finally, Ms. Pfeiffer, what's your take on that issue?
Thank you. The Wisconsin judicial branch is controlled ethically by the Wisconsin Code of Judicial Conduct as well, and there are limitations in there that we all have to follow as members of the judicial branch. It is to maintain the independence and the integrity of the judicial branch and the judiciary and members of that. So when people come into court, they know that they are having someone who is not necessarily part of one political party or another with an agenda that they're trying to advance. And so in terms of what judges and commissioners can do, we absolutely can write articles, we can give generalized overviews of the system and our viewpoints on that, but we are not allowed to even endorse partisan candidates. If there was someone that I really wanted for state assembly, I have to remain neutral and silent, or I would be in violation of my ethics code. And so when it comes to legislation, the judges do have a number of different committees, court commissioners do as well, that works on and suggests different changes to the laws, but ultimately it comes down to the legislative branch. And sometimes they are more willing to work with the judicial branch, and other times they will ignore the judicial branch for years. And so you've got that separation of powers for a reason, and so you have to understand your role. And there are certain things judges can control, and we need to focus on that and make sure that we are doing what we can within our purviews and minding our ethics, of course.
Thank you. Now I'd like to turn to a different question. What does the term cultural sensitivity mean in the context of your courtroom? If you were a judge, how would you, as a judge, achieve that in your court? Ms. Cunningham.
Cultural sensitivity is recognizing different cultures and what is the norm within those cultures. You know, I hate to be cliche, but you think about the Black community or the Latino community, just in general, there are things that are acceptable within those communities that in the dominant community are not acceptable. And so when the different communities come in contact with each other, for instance, when a courtroom, I think it's really important for the judge and other individuals in the court to have that cultural understanding and sensitivity. And also recognizing that individuals who come into the courtroom are usually experiencing one of the worst times in their lives, and how they are going to respond to that may look different depending on their cultural background. And rather than punishing someone or assuming that someone is responding a certain way because of being disrespectful, understanding an individual's backgrounds and motivations, I think, goes a long way in allowing people to be heard rather than being dismissed or assume that they're not participating.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Pfeiffer, please respond.
Thank you. When you're in the courthouse, any number of people can come through your courtroom. We have people with multi-million dollar estates and companies and businesses, and then we have people who are homeless and all sorts of different backgrounds. We have interpreters for many different languages that we have to have either come in or on the telephone available to us. And so you really have to have an open mind and a bit of a background in working with people from different cultures as well, as a judicial officer and as a lawyer, because you will encounter them, and they have different mores and different social values. And also people with different religious backgrounds may have very strict rules as well. These are things that, as Attorney Cunningham said, you want to factor that in, but you also need to maintain your courtroom decorum. You need to maintain your docket. You need to be able to communicate this with everyone so that they understand, while there may be cultural differences, there are certain expectations that still have to be followed in court. There is, of course, ways to do that without being that judge that you see on TV yelling at everyone and pounding a gavel. There's ways that you can handle and address the issues, from the attorneys to the social workers to everyone involved, and then also be aware of the differences while they are also maintaining their composure. As Attorney Cunningham said, sometimes this is the worst day of their life. but we still have to make sure, understanding their background, that they understand this is how we do things here as well.
Thank you. And finally, Ms. Gabrielle.
Issues of cultural sensitivity, of course, is something that has concerned me as a prosecutor. We've had to deal with many cases with many different people from different backgrounds, either as victims or as defendants or as witnesses even. And it's important for us as prosecutors, as judges, just as a community in whole, to keep ourselves educated on these cultural differences and to understand them and to not hold someone more accountable or punish someone more or treat them any differently because of these cultural differences. We're a society where the rule of law prevails, and as we don't want to discriminate against someone because of the color of their skin or their gender, we also wouldn't want to do that because of cultural backgrounds. So while we can have an understanding and allow these people who come from different backgrounds and have different values, perhaps, or different cultural values, we can treat them with respect and with professionalism. Ultimately, the rule of law must prevail, and we need to make sure that we consider what the legislature has told us to do.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And now we're going to move on to our closing statements of 1 minute apiece, and we're going to go in the opposite order from the opening statements. This will be a 1 minute statement, and we're going to begin by calling on Angelina Gabrielle to make her closing 1 minute statement.
Thank you. My campaign slogan is "Experience Counts," but I ask that you look beyond the slogan for the substance behind those words. For 25 years, I've dedicated myself to protecting the most vulnerable in our community, working long hours, giving up vacations and weekends to bring justice to victims and to protect our community. I believe Kenosha deserves a judge with that proven experience and commitment, one who has the judgment that comes from handling the most serious cases our county sees. These serious cases carry far-reaching implications and complex legal issues. They need to be handled correctly, and that's why my experience really counts. It's my tried and true experience that has earned me the endorsements of victims that I've helped, many in law enforcement, Representative Tip McGuire, Mike Gravely, the district attorney, and the bipartisan support of many of our community leaders.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And now to Elizabeth Pfeiffer.
Thank you. I absolutely agree that Kenosha deserves a judge with education, experience, and expertise. I think it's an essential position and the first time in 10 years plus that voters get to decide for themselves, without the help of a governor, who that will be. As I said at the beginning, I've been an attorney for over 23 years. I'm in my 23rd year. I have an excellent educational background. I attend training seminars every year to make sure that I stay up on the differences in law and the changes, as well as learning new techniques. And then with regards to expertise, as I've indicated, it's not just criminal law that I focused on as a deputy district attorney or as a criminal defense attorney. It's civil law, family law. I was a mediator as well, and also a law professor where I was teaching law to law students as well as college students. We need someone with the credentials, the judicial temperament, and the energy to keep up with these busy dockets, and that would be me, Elizabeth Pfeiffer.
Thank you. And the last word goes to Ms. Angela Cunningham.
I will use my breadth of personal and professional experience to ensure justice for all in Kenosha County. And ensuring justice for all means not just having the legal experience and background, but knowing about our community. On the legal end, I have been a prosecutor and a defense attorney, a family law attorney, a guardian ad litem. I've handled various areas of the law, and if elected judge, could handle a docket in any of those areas of the law. I also was previously a social worker. I'm actively involved in our community. I understand the needs in our community. I understand how decisions that are made in the courtrooms are affected in our community, and we need a judge on the bench who has that personal knowledge so that when decisions are made in the course of using their discretion, that a judge takes the community into consideration. And I am the one candidate who has that experience.
Thank you. Thank you to all of our candidates for Branch 6 of the Kenosha District Court, Angela Cunningham, Angelina Gabrielle, and Elizabeth Pfeiffer. Listeners, remember to vote as early and as safely as you can. The primary election to choose among these three is on Tuesday, February 16th. You vote for only one. The top two then face off on April 6th. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta urging you to get involved in the elections and to vote. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. The